broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I don't dispute that $56 million is a lot of money. I don't dispute the merits of the suit.
We have about 33 pages in a document.
Generally, I would agree with that. You want the marketplace to determine what the right compensation is.
I don't dispute that $56 million is a lot of money.
I've used the N-word most of my life.
Cuddle with me.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, the groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show, here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A trip through the looking glass of talk radio and reality. On this program, we take on everybody. All right, now coming up, we have with us Professor Emory Clayton. Professor Clayton, who is a professor of philosophy, political science, as well as African-American studies at L.A. Canyon College, joins us to talk about a couple of things in the news having to do with African-Americans, and I don't even want to say African-American, you know, the entire community, just having to do with, I suppose, African-American issues. Coming up next hour, we will have with us Robert Green. He's the CEO of Fraser Foods, and we'll be discussing with us the TARP monies, the compensation for these executives and these other individuals who were working for these companies that were receiving TARP compensation, and the money that they're getting, that they're still taking, in terms of bonuses. But first, let's bring on Professor Emory Clayton. Sir, how are you this evening?
I'm very good, Phil, and thank you for having me on your program again.
Now, on MSNBC, Professor Clayton, Contessa Brewer has apologized for mixing up civil rights activists Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. Now, this took place on MSNBC sometime over the last few days. She made the slip-up, I guess it was Wednesday, while she was introducing Jackson. So let's listen to Contessa Brewer here as she talks with Reverend Jackson, but in point of fact thinks she's talking to, or makes the mistake of talking to, or basically identifies him as Al Sharpton.
Joining me now to talk about this and the nation's real problem of joblessness, the Reverend Al Sharpton. What's your reaction to hearing someone say, you know, when it comes to income inequality, all's well. The rising tide floats all boats.
I'm Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Right. I don't. You know, I'm so sorry. The script in front of me said Reverend Al Sharpton. I'm looking at your face. I know who you are, Reverend Jackson. We all do. I'm sorry.
All right. So you heard that. And she did apologize, Professor.
Well, I know she apologized, Phil. I could hear that very clearly. I would apologize, too, because I don't think I've heard too many more ignorant things on television or radio than what happens with some of these reporters when they believe that they're talking to one black person and they find out they're talking to another black person. I'd be embarrassed as well. So, of course, she's going to apologize because she knows that she has to apologize for fear of losing her job. But if no one had pointed out to her that she was sitting in front of Jesse Jackson, that woman would have continued believing she was talking to Al Sharpton. And that's at the crux of what I'm trying to say to you and what I've been talking to my students about. If you're a reporter, then you have an obligation to know who it is you're speaking with. I understand that there are some white people who work under this handicap that they cannot tell the difference between one black person and another black person.
Well, wait, do you think that that's her problem?
I know that's her problem. You heard it. It's there for all to see. It's there for all to hear. She thought she was talking to Al Sharpton. She had. Now, these are two men that are very well known. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are both prominent members of the African-American community and have been a part of social movements and social activism for decades. There's no question who these men are, and there should be no question as to what they look like. But you've got a white woman on CNBC.
MSNBC.
MSNBC, who reacts as a white person will react when they are looking to show their literacy, their erudition, and they forget to take a good long look at the black man or the black woman that's in front of them. I think that what you have to do is you have to understand that this has been going on now for a long time. And we've seen examples of this countless times with Barack Obama. They're continually trying to confuse him with Osama bin Laden, as if a black man who wears a turban and a black man who wears a business suit, as if you can't tell the difference between the two.
No, don't you think, though, the Barack Obama and Osama bin Laden confusion has more to do with the name, not the way these guys look?
I've never heard an American president yet confused with another individual. I've never heard an American president yet who's been confused with another prominent person internationally. We had a president by the name of George Bush. I never heard anyone confuse him with anybody else named Bush. We had an American president named Clinton.
Well, can you think of anybody named Bush? That's
not the point. The point is that there are a great many prominent people in this world who share the same last name or have names that are similar, but I've never heard it happen to any American president until it happened to President Barack Obama. Now, the other point to make is not so much that this woman confuses one black man with another.
Let me interrupt you here for just a second. Do you think this indicates a racism on her part?
Of course it indicates racism, but it's not the kind of racism that any white person is going to acknowledge, because they believe that it is what they call an innocent mistake. Well, you can call it an innocent mistake if you want to, but it is not innocent when you have one of the most prominent people in the African-American community sitting in front of you, the man who stood on the balcony with Dr. King, a man who has been a part of American politics for decades, and you confuse him with another man named Al Sharpton, who comes at the political process and the question of social activism from a completely different point of view. It, of course, bespeaks the white reporter who's reading a script because she can't tell who the man is in front of her. And so,
what do I want to know? No, she said that she was reading from a script.
No, but she had to read the script to know who it was she was sitting in front of. That's how absolutely, without any ability to scrutinize or to discriminate, that is how absolutely blind this woman was.
What I heard her say was, I was reading the script.
And if the script, and the script said it was Al Sharpton, and sitting right in front of her is Jesse Jackson. Now, as far as she was concerned, that was Al Sharpton.
So you're telling me that you believe this reporter from MSNBC, Contessa Brewer, really thought that Al Sharpton was sitting in front of her?
Phil, I don't have to contend. I've got the tape recording of what you just played to prove it.
All right, let me play it one more time so the audience knows what I'm talking about.
Well, you can play it one more. I know what you're talking about. I heard it. I don't need to hear it one more time, and I think I don't think you're showing much respect to the audience when you have to play it again, so that you can say to them, no, she really isn't what she is. She's something else, because the professor here has got to be wrong. I can't believe that a white woman would sit and look at a man and not know that it is Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton. I'm here to tell you that white people do it all the time. Now, I'm not trying to denigrate the white race. This is a social as well as a historical problem, one that can be solved, but one that we cannot ignore, and one that we cannot deny, especially when we have the evidence of it right before our very eyes. And in the case of this woman, Brewer, on the CNBC or MSNBC, she had right in front of her Jesse Jackson, but as far as she was concerned, he weighed another 30 pounds, had his hair in a semi-conk hairdo, had a ridiculous-looking mustache, however you want to describe Reverend Al Sharpton, and as far as she was concerned, that's what he looked like.
All right, you may be right. I don't know. I don't think so. I have to be very honest with you. I'm going to play this again so we can listen to Contessa Brewer here as she brings on, she attempts to bring on Jesse Jackson.
Joining me now to talk about this and the nation's real problem of joblessness, the Reverend Al Sharpton. What's your reaction to hearing someone say, you know, when it comes to income inequality, all's well. The rising tide floats all boats.
I'm Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Right there. You heard that, right?
I heard.
I'm so sorry. The script in front of me said Reverend Al Sharpton. I'm looking at your face. I know who you are, Reverend Jackson. We all do. I'm sorry.
So the point that you're making is that the script.
Yeah, the point I'm making is that she says it for me. She does. She basically puts the noose around her own neck when she says, the script in front of me said Al Sharpton, and because I don't know who you are or what Al Sharpton looks like or anything else. I just assume you're Al Sharpton.
Let's ask this question, okay? Let me ask this question. Suppose she was so dumb she didn't know what Al Sharpton looked like, and so she assumed that the man who looked like Jesse Jackson that was sitting in front of her was Al Sharpton.
You're attributing to her then, Phil, even more stupidity than I am. If you'd like to believe that, then you go right ahead and believe that, and my very, very best wishes to you and the best of luck. But you want to attribute to her more stupidity than I'm attributing to her. I'm not saying she's a stupid woman. I'm saying she is a typically white woman, and that she has a script that says that this is Al Sharpton, and she knows what Al Sharpton looks like. But to her, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, there ain't any difference because of the black skin. And again, what I tell my students in our African-American studies programs and our social studies programs is understand that once you have black skin, once the DNA is established that your skin is black, you are all the same. You are all a unit, as if it was an assembly line of black androids that had just rolled off the assembly line plant. All of the faces are the same, and basically the function is the same, and that is to either vote for me or to buy my product, but to be seen as an individual. It doesn't matter how famous you are, how great you are, how many mountains you've climbed in your life. If you're Jesse Jackson, who stood on the balcony with Martin Luther King the day he was shot down, as far as this white woman at MSNBC is concerned, he is fat. He's got a permanent hairdo, or however you want to describe Reverend Sharpton, and he wears a cheap suit, or however you want to describe him.
Boy, you've got a lot of insulting things to say about Al Sharpton.
Well, I'm not saying anything that at least I know what he looks like. You understand what I'm saying? I know what he looks like. I know the difference between him and Jesse Jackson. I know that Jesse Jackson speaks with a very thick Georgia accent. I know Al Sharpton's got a New York accent. I know Jesse Jackson wears his hair shorter than Al Sharpton. I know Jesse Jackson's skin is darker complected than Al Sharpton's. I know Jesse Jackson has a thinner mustache, and Al Sharpton goes for that big, thick, if you want to call it a walrus mustache, something like that. These are things that I understand and that most observant black people see. But to the white,
Now, you're talking about all white people here. A minute ago, we were talking about Contessa Brewer.
I'm talking about the average white. I'm not saying that all, but the average white sees the same man, the same face. And I swear there are times when, in the instance of that South African runner, it could be a woman or a man. It's just the same. It's the same individual. Not a male, not a female, but some kind of a unisex or eunuch individual that serves their purposes. And nothing could be clearer proof of it than that audio clip you just played.
All right, we're with Professor Emery Clayton from L.A. Canyon College here on this MSNBC slip-up by Contessa Brewer, sitting in a studio with Jesse Jackson and referring to him as Al Sharpton. The professor has the view, which is shared by some, and it's a fairly long-standing view that is held by some. To some white people, all black people look the same. And he's basically indicting Contessa Brewer of MSNBC as having that type of perception. Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, what's the difference? We also want to talk to him a little bit about the Louis Farrakhan statement that the swine flu vaccine, is a plot to limit overpopulation. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be back here with Professor Emery Clayton from L.A. Canyon College in a moment to take your phone calls and more statements and comments from him.
Phil Hendry. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, the number here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Remember, you can watch a live video stream of our show every night at philhendryshow.com. You can also listen to the audio live streaming on our website at philhendryshow.com, and you can download the shows the very next day. I had a couple of things here. We're talking with Professor Emory Clayton from L.A. Canyon College on the Contessa Brewer misintroduction on MSNBC. She had Jesse Jackson sitting there, but she had referred to him as Al Sharpton. Now, she did say that she had a script saying it was Al Sharpton, and I recognize what you're saying.
Yeah, but Phil, she needs to know the difference between Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson.
No, I know what you're saying, and any good journalist would. What I'm saying is there any room, in your opinion, for the fact that she...
Hold on, Phil. I'm gonna give you an example. You listen to how you are struggling with this. You are struggling with this point of view.
No, I'm not. I'm having a hard time articulating.
No, you're having a hard time articulating because you don't understand what it is you want to say. You don't have anything to say. I have told you what the problem is. She sees a black man sitting there. She sees the name Al Sharpton. Phil, in my class on Saturdays when we do racial sensitivity and we do a what we call a racial recognition, our class, I'll have two black students come up. One will be thin and the other will be heavy. And I'll ask the white students which one is which, who is who, which is the person whose name might be Joe and which is the person whose name might be Bill. They can't, it's very difficult for them to do that. They cannot differentiate because they see just a black, almost like a black blob or a large black mass. And
well, they certainly see individuals, don't they?
To the extent they see individuals, yes, but it's the same person that they're looking at back and forth, no matter how big and fat one of them may be. It's the same big black thing. You see what I'm saying? And to Contessa Brewer, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, just one big black thing that's sitting across from her.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, the number here. Let's go to a phone call. We have Anne Marie in Boston. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Anne Marie, what's up?
Hi there, Professor Clayton.
Hi.
My name is Anne Marie.
Yes, ma'am.
And, you know, I'm just driving
home.
Pleased
to meet you.
From a little bit of a night out in Boston, and I wish that I caught the entire context of this show. I really wish I did. But when I just started hearing you sort of throw me into this, all these white people that just sort of see black people as a blob and can't differentiate between Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson.
Well, we've got an example of that that Mr. Hendry played on the air here a moment ago.
Is the lady there? Okay.
I'm still here. 8-7. I'm sorry, I was interrupted.
Okay, did you hear you heard the professor's comment?
I mean, I heard a little bit of it. Like I said, I wish...
Well, Professor, why don't you repeat what you said?
What I said to the lady is that we've got this Brewer woman, this white woman over here at MSNBC that called Jesse Jackson Al Sharpton. Now, that is about as classic an example as I can give you of a white one of these whites seeing a big black mass.
Okay, now, let me ask you something. Could that have just been a conscious mistake on her part? Or do you
of
think
course
that
it's a of course it's of course it's a conscious mistake, of course it's a conscious mistake. But do you know why she made the conscious mistake?
I don't know.
Maybe what I'm trying to educate you.
Words as opposed to the person sitting across from her.
Well, nobody would have Mr. Hendry referred to George Washington a minute ago. No one would have George Washington sitting in front of him and say, "And now tonight, I'd like to bring on Barack Obama." You'd know it was George Washington. I don't think there'd be any mistaking that. No one would have George Bush sitting in front of him and saying, "Tonight I think I'll bring on Thomas Jefferson." So why is it that Jesse Jackson suddenly becomes Al Sharpton? Because he's a black man and a white reporter who is in pressed for time and wants to get to her very meaningful questions or whatever she's going to ask, is blowing by the fact that she's talking to an individual. She just wants to talk to the black that she's got in the studio. See, I don't use the term anymore, black people, black man. I just say the black. Just as I say the white.
You're speaking on her behalf. It could have just been a stupid mistake on her part.
Well, yeah, but I'm giving you... It was a mistake. It was a total mistake because this white made the mistake of seeing a big black thing instead of a man.
You're assuming she's seeing a big black thing. It sounds to me
that's what she was doing. Because I just told you, you can't possibly make that mistake.
Racism 101.
No.
Racism.
Yes, that's MSNBC, Racism 101. Yes, ma'am.
All right, we'll be back. 877-876-PHIL with the Professor Emery Clayton.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
With Professor Emery Clayton tonight here on the groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show, our number 877-876-PHIL. Professor, before we go to a bunch of phone calls that we have for you, you and I were talking before we went on the air about the Malcolm X's life. I told you I'd read the book and had seen the film.
Yes, you had told me that you had seen the film, and you said, well, I read the book, and I think for most whites, if you talk to a lot of your whites, they'll say, I read the book. What that means is I saw the movie. But you say you read the book, too? That's what you're saying?
Yes, sir. I read the biography of Malcolm X.
All right, because as I said, with a lot of the whites, you are using that as a way of saying I saw the movie. I've seen the movie. I read the book.
Well, what I wanted to say was, in the film and in the book, Malcolm X talked about the slave mentality. And you brought up something that I thought was interesting.
I was talking about the slave master mentality. You see, it cuts both ways. It cuts both ways. You can have a slave mentality if you're black, but the white has the slave master mentality. They have the slave master mentality, which means when they look at a black and they see two of them together, as this white woman on MSNBC, this Brewer, she had Jesse Jackson sitting there, but she saw Al Sharpton. And the reason is she's got the slave master mentality. She is thinking of the black as just a blur, or what we call the black hole. That's why those two gentlemen back east got upset when they came out of that lecture. They had heard the term black hole. Well, to a black, that means that a black hole to a black is something that we were referred to by the slave master. Just a large void, a big black dark void. Nothing coming in, nothing going out, you see.
But it's a space term. It's an astronomical term.
I know it's an astronomical term for the white. The white man says it's an to the black, it is a big, that's what we were and what we are to the slave master, a big black sucking hole.
877-876-PHIL is the number on the Phil Hendry Show. We'll go to a phone call here. It is Robert in Los Angeles. Robert, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. What's going on tonight, Robert?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, sir.
My comment on that is this. The lady made a mistake. All white people do not see that all blacks look alike. If you reverse that with some of the racism that black people give off themselves, all white people look alike. Now, we're not in the 50s anymore. We need to stop this and just let it roll.
Brother, let me say one thing. Can I just say one thing to you? Number one, you say the lady made a mistake. I don't disagree with that. I'm saying white people make that mistake all the time. It is an unconscious mistake, a subconscious mistake.
And so do black people. They make that mistake.
Well, black,
prejudice,
yeah, but
black
you
people make that mistake too. So why are you not jumping on the prejudiced black people?
You're buying into something, though. You're buying into what the white man told you. The white man said, you're racist, too. You can't be racist. You don't have the power. The white man had the power. The black man does not have the power. We can't be racist.
Okay, so
it's impossible.
You teach pro-black hate.
I do not teach pro-black hate. I teach keeping your eyes open and don't let them look at you like you're a big ink blob. See, brother,
okay,
when you go through life,
like that too, right?
I believe. Well, I have demanded respect of myself.
Okay,
now
so
I know my wife.
So if you demand, they look at you the same way.
No, but my whites, they respect me. I've taught my whites well. And I tell the whites that are around me, you're going to see me as a man with, you know, and I'm a good-looking man and all this. Now, I don't know what you do for a living, but when you go out in the world and you're standing next to another black man or a black woman, white man look at you and said, there's a big black, it's a big hole, you know, a black hole, see?
Let me ask a question here. What do you mean black hole?
That's what I'm trying to say to this young man. Now, I want to be an individual just like this young man does. I don't want to be something that got spilled on a rug. You know what I'm saying, young man?
I'm not nothing spilled on a rug, and I'm me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You don't want to be something that was just, like, blurred all together with the breakfast, you know.
Again, we can say the same thing about white people, but we don't. We choose not to. I choose not. Our generation, I'm 43. My generation choose not to. We choose to live and let live.
I think that's a great way to be, but you got to understand something. It's easy to see the white difference. I mean, look at them. They got the brown in hair, and they got red hair, and they're pink, and some are all freckled up. I mean, they're all real weird, you know, not weird, but they're different, right? How can you not see them as different? I mean, it's like a big polka dot shirt coming your way, you know. But when you look at a black man, if you're white, you look at blacks, all you see is just the big, like somebody spilled chocolate syrup on a counter.
Negative.
What does this mean?
What do you mean negative?
Negative.
In my opinion, and it's been my... Then how come that white woman said, yeah, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, what's the difference? You both got mustaches.
She didn't say that.
Okay. That's what I heard her say.
She didn't say that. She just said Al Sharpton, oh, I'm sorry, you're Jesse Jackson.
No, she come on with
George
a big...
Bush and George W. Bush both got blue eyes. What's the difference? Both of them was pirates. Same thing.
I can tell the difference between those two men because one of them old and one of them skinny and the other one talk funny. You know, you see what I'm saying?
They're still white.
Okay. All right. Listen, they're still white people. And so you're saying that there isn't any equally big white hole.
You're talking about a white hole. Have you ever heard a black man, have you ever heard a brother say, oh, I don't know the difference between John Travolta and Angelina Jolie, right? You ain't never going to make that mistake.
You're not going to make that mistake. One's a man and the other's a woman.
What about that woman in South Africa? They didn't even know she was a woman. That's how much of a blob she was.
That had nothing to do. That was the athletic. That was the Olympics trying to figure something out. Anyway, Robert, thank you so much for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Stacy here in Cincinnati. Stacy, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Professor Emery Clayton. Yes, ma'am.
First of all, I want to make...
But you understand the point that I'm trying to make, right, Phil?
I have the caller on the line right now.
But the point I'm making is this. The black hole, a large void, just a dark void.
Yeah, so that when that lady had Jesse Jackson on her show today, it was a void.
Yes, it was a void. It was a Jackson-Shopton void.
All right, go ahead, Stacy.
Okay, first of all, when you're sitting there talking about the Olympics, I have a cousin.
Yeah, that's a good example.
I have a cousin that is white, and you could mistake her for a man or a female. It was very if she didn't let her hair grow just a little bit, you could definitely mistake her for a man. So
exactly.
There's no
that's
difference
my point.
In the black and white.
No, I'm saying that this sister in South Africa was a woman, and the white man didn't know it. Thought it was a man. Thought it was a. Didn't know what it was.
Sir, and that can happen. That can happen with white people also. We have plenty of men that we can't figure out a woman because they might.
Now I'm gonna. When have you ever walked up to two whites and said, "I don't know the difference between the two of them"? Never. In my classroom, when I do these racial sensitivity seminars, and I have a black man, two black men, one's fat, one's skinny, you can tell a difference. And I ask my white students, which one is which? And only they tell me, they report back to me, that at first they were stunned, and then they saw just a massive gray field.
let me get this straight.
Wait a minute, man.
No, you laughing at me, Phil. You know, it's easy for the white man to laugh. I have to live with this. This lady, are you black, ma'am?
You pick.
Is the lady black? Is the lady black or is she?
Oh, I'm a white woman.
You're white. All right. You sound black. Sound black. All right.
Stacy,
go ahead. Finish your point.
Well, I was making a point. I said it's a big, large, gray field.
Go ahead.
Okay, but first of all, you're bringing a lot of prejudice, and that's what, you know, we hear. Okay, so
Phil, you got to play that. This lady didn't hear the clip. You got to hear this, ma'am. You got to hear this. This is the actual lady on the TV show today.
Joining me now to talk about this and the nation's real problem of joblessness, the Reverend Al Sharpton. What's your reaction to hearing someone say, you know, when it comes to income inequality, all's well. The rising tide floats all boats.
Here it comes.
I'm Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Oh, that's right.
You know, I'm so sorry. The script in front of me said Reverend Al Sharpton.
Yeah,
I'm looking at your face. I know you are Reverend Jackson. We all do. I'm sorry.
That lady said the script in front of me said Al Sharpton. So naturally, I thought you was Al Sharpton because I can't tell the difference between you and Al Sharpton because it's just a large, massive, just a blackness. There's a darkness that surrounds me. You see what I'm saying, lady? Is the woman still there, sir?
Yeah, Stacey, we played the clip for you.
Yes,
go ahead. Final comment, then we have to move on. Go ahead.
But the problem is, you are bringing a lot of prejudice into it, and it was a mistake. Black people make mistakes.
I just played the clip for you, and you're still saying that I'm prejudiced.
But no,
you white people.
What if we said you black people? What would you do?
You're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to say that.
You can call us white people.
Because we've been through 500 years of y'all telling us how to do things. Now, look, you white.
Do you want a better world? Let's get along.
You remember the guy in The Godfather when he said you guineas are all the same? I didn't say that, did I? I'm not saying it like The Godfather.
What's The Godfather got to do with it, Professor Emery? The three times people have made this point, Stacey's made it most recently. It is an innocent mistake. People misspeak. I have found myself saying the wrong name at times when I'm talking to somebody else.
Yeah, but you're talking to them on the phone, aren't you?
Yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh. Gotcha.
Hey, I do
gotcha.
It in person.
Gotcha.
I do it.
Gotcha.
No, you didn't get me. You didn't.
Yes, I did. You're on a telephone. You can't see them. Unless you're trying to tell me this Contessa Brewer is blind. If she's blind, all right, I understand. Is she a blind woman?
Who?
The lady on MSNBC. Is she a blind woman? Does she wear sunglasses?
No.
Then no excuse. If she were a blind woman sitting there doing the interview and she said, I got Al Sharpton, and said, no, I'm Jesse Jackson, she could say, well, I got no eyeballs. Didn't take the glasses off. You see how they stare up at the ceiling or however they do that. Then you'd have yourself an argument. But this lady, Stacy... many of my whites.
Do you want prejudice to stop? Because it starts with all of us, and everybody needs to stop the prejudice. And it sounds to me like you really don't want to. It sounds to
I
me
do
like
want
you want
it.
To
I do. I want it to. I want it to stop, but I want it to stop with you first.
All right. Thank you very much, Stacy. I don't know what that means. 877-876 Phil. We'll go to one more phone call here on line five. We've got in Sugarland, Texas. This is Jason. Jason, you're on the Phil Hendry Show here with Professor Emery Clayton. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Clayton, I'm curious, how did you get your job?
How did I get my job? What kind of a question is that? I applied for the position.
I'm asking you a
simple
question.
And I was accepted.
How did you get your job?
I applied for the position.
You applied for it?
Are you familiar with how people get jobs? They apply. They have an application.
All right, check it out. Look, I am a white man, and I'm a Republican.
Check it out.
Let me finish.
Check.
I don't look at the people as the color they are. Let me finish, sir.
You don't have the education to talk to me that way. No, watch it.
I don't have.
Whoa! That's easy. Both of you guys, hold on.
Well, you don't sound. Did you get out of high school?
Hold on for a minute.
I'll let him.
Gentlemen.
Little comments, because he has nothing. He ain't got nothing to play.
All I asked you is, have you got your GED? Have you got your GED?
I've got a four-year and a master's, sir.
A master's? Like in the sailing ships
look,
and stuff?
I don't need
no, a college, a master's.
Credentials to you, okay?
All right, go ahead. Sir, go ahead, Jason. I apologize.
You apologize.
No problem. No problem. No problem.
Go ahead.
I'd like to ask him also.
Wait a minute. You wanted to say something, but you want to interview me. Now, which is it? You want to ask me questions? You
I'd
got
like
something to say?
What happens when people call into a radio show? Do they ask the person questions, or what do you think normally happens?
I don't know. I don't come on these programs that often. I thought I was going to make my statements and not be bothered with. And I don't mean I'm not saying you're bothering me, but it's
okay. Well,
I don't think you
all
really,
right. Let me ask you a question.
You really shouldn't be allowed
what,
to ask
what is,
questions.
What is a slave master's mentality? Tell me that.
It's the same as the slave. The slave mentality only is the slave master mentality.
What is a slave master's mentality? Tell me how I look at people. You tell
you
me.
You look at the black man.
Know.
You look at the black man as a potential threat to you. Now you
do
don't
I,
necessarily
how
walk
am I
across the street when you see one.
People?
You
how
feel
am I threatened by
take
black
your job.
People?
He's going to take your job. He's going
to. Oh, how's he going to take my job?
He's going to be more attractive to your girl.
Than I do? Let him take
he's
it. Gonna
take,
it's capitalism.
He's going to take your girlfriend away from you. He's going to take your girlfriend away from you.
That's
and intermarry. He's going to intermarry with your girlfriend, and you're going to have a whole bunch of little pickaninny nephews and stuff like that. You know what?
Oh, come on.
You're telling me that I'm worried about black people taking my girlfriend?
You are worried about a black man, a black man with a wide-brimmed hat taking your girlfriend, a black man with a wide-brimmed Superfly hat taking your girlfriend, sitting her down on the tuck and roll of his Cadillac and speeding off into the sunset. You're worried about that.
What does that mean? What the hell?
Are you kidding me?
Brother, I'll tell you again. You're worried. You're worried about a black man with his shirt open to his navel.
Jesse Jackson.
And what's the difference between Al Sharpton? Let me ask you. I'm going to prove a point here, Phil. What's the difference between Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson?
One of them's a race baiter and one of them's a bigot. How about that for starters?
See, the man don't know. He don't know.
Just like
doesn't
you.
Know.
You.
I'll tell you.
Except grind.
30 pounds.
White people
30
don't like
pounds.
You. White people don't like you. You've got nothing, dude.
Well, you don't like
people
me.
Don't care.
Do you like me?
People don't
do
care
you like
anymore,
me?
Dude.
Do you like me? Do you like me?
I don't care what color you are, man. I don't like your
opinion. No.
I
you don't like me because I'm
it's
black.
Horrendous,
that's why.
Man. You sit here and tell people that white people have a slave master mentality.
I gotta tell you something.
Dude, get over it.
Do you think black people got a slave mentality? Do you think black people got a slave mentality?
I don't.
Whoa! We gotta watch your language. Watch the language there. Watch it. 877-876 Phil. That's okay.
Look at that. See that young white that I was just talking to. He made with that dirty word, you know, because he's not very articulate. Now, I'm going to say it again. That young white man...
Well, you did egg him on.
I had to egg him on. It became necessary for me to outrage that young man so that I could find out where he was really coming from. Now, he claimed to have a master's degree, and he might. And he may be educated, and he might be extremely well-rounded and observant. But I'm telling you, his biggest fear in life is that a black man's going to come along with one of those mutton chop sideburn get-ups and a big Superfly hat with a shirt open to the navel. He's going to sit his girlfriend butt down on that tuck and roll in a Cadillac that is kind of violet on the outside, and it's got...
All right. Thanks very much, Professor. God.
What was he doing with that?
I don't know, but I got to take a break. 877-876-PHIL. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Off into the sunset they go.
Phil Hendry.
I've used the N-word most of my life.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, and we'll be with Bob Green next hour. He's the CEO of Fraser Foods, a major grocery concern in the Southeast as well as the Southwest. We'll be talking about the bonuses that are being taken by some Wall Street and banking executives and his feeling on that. And he thinks that the administration's going a little overboard trying to keep these guys from taking bonuses that he thinks are well-deserved. City officials in Reidsville, North Carolina, have banned future performances by a popular regional country band after the group sang an anti-gay rendition of a classic Merle Haggard song at a local festival. Reidsville officials hired
Matt Boswell and the Hillbilly Blues Band to sing at their fall festival held at Market Square in the city's downtown area on Saturday, October the 10th. Local news station WGSR, Channel 47, broadcast the event live. In his rendition of Haggard's Are the Good Times Really Over for Good, Boswell sings, well, the following lyrics.
All you Wall Street bankers, as far as I'm concerned, you can all go to hell.
Yeah. All right.
You can't get married, you stupid gays and queers. So why don't you go somewhere else?
Well, there you go. And good sense on the part of the band, too, to perform that live in front of, like, they've, you ain't going to have a hit record, man, but I bet you you'll sell a few CDs. All right, we'll be back with Robert Green from Fraser Foods on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Henry.